We're going to be looking at the 67th Mizmor. It is one that many of you have probably familiar with, particularly if you come from a Sephardic background. And in the Sidurim of Edot HaMizrach, Sephardic Sidurim, right before Baruch She'amar, it figures there. But you will see, when you look at this Mizmor, that there seems to be a division. At least I made some kind of a division here, merely to highlight two verses, fourth and the sixth, that are identical. You will look also at the fifth, and you will notice how long it is compared to all the others, which means that this is actually going to be the middle candelabra of a menorah, and serve as its stand as well, because it's that much longer. And that's how it always figures. And this kind of structure is not something new that somebody has discovered. It's actually quite ancient. So I have for you a footnote here to explain why I deem this so. Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, who is the author of a Pirush on the Tanakh called Akedat Yitzchak, wrote in Parashat Emor. In Parashat Emor, we have some of the mitzvot dealing with Sfirat HaOmer and the Shalosh Regalim, the three holidays when we used to come to Beit HaMikdash, and the counting of the Omer from Pesach to Chag HaShavuot. And he tells us as follows, and I quote, "The Mizmor Nechbad U'Me'uleh," in this Mizmor, this honored and superior Mizmor, "Haya HaMinhag," it was the custom. Now, he is writing this in Italy. He being one of the people that was forced to flee Spain in 1492 and ended up in Italy. And he is writing that this is their custom from long, long ago. "Haya HaMinhag Le'omro B'Yimei HaSfira," to say it during the days of the Sfira, and he goes and adds, "Sheba beKabbalah," we know, he says, by oral tradition, "Shehaya Mitzuyar beMagen David," it was drawn on the, not in the Star of David, but on the shield of David, "Kidmut Menorah," there was a form of a menorah, "Shlosha kanei menorah mitzida achat," three candles on one side, three on the other, and he goes and tells us what they are, what those words are. And then in the middle, "The hakanei emtzai hu pasuk yismichu v'yirananu le'umim ha'omed ba'emtza." That one stands in the middle. "Ki hu aroch mikulam," for it is the longest of them all. "V'hine yesh b'zayin hakanim," and in these seven sticks, if you like, of the menorah, there are 49 tevot, meaning words, "kimispal yemei hasfira," like the 49 days that we count between Pesach and Shavuot, counting seven times seven. Incredible. It would be substantiated, as you know, that many Mizmorim are written in shapes, and were written this way from antiquity. In fact, in the scrolls that were found in Mitzada, where they found a scroll that is almost complete, some of it was eaten by bugs or by erosion, they found several Mizmorim written in forms and in shapes. Now, Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch wants to divide this into three parts, each part ending with the word Sella. By the way, Pasuk Aleph is not deemed as the body of the Mizmor, it's not just the title. Bet ends with Sella. Then he goes and takes Gimel, Daled, Hey, Sella, and then Vav, Zayin, and Chet is the last part. And he divides it into three parts. Those three parts, according to him, represent three levels. The levels that occur in human recognition of one God. The first, is the recognition of monotheism that was initially limited to Am Yisrael. You will soon see that this is consistent because it's written here, we, Elohim Yechanenu V'Yevarchenu. It's the plural first person. God will grace us. He will bless us. He will shine His face with us, Selah. And so that represents God's special covenant with Am Yisrael. The second level is part of our mission, and that is that the recognition of one God has now gone and disseminated amongst some of the nations of the world. Needless to say, Islam and Christendom, that are supposed to be, at least by Hirsch's account, monotheistic religions. Islam, definitely. Christianity is questionable because of the Trinity, needless to say. But they gradually come to recognize this. So you do have among Christians those that have come to the recognition of what we would call the Unitarian position, that there's only one God. And finally, the third level after the second Selah, meaning verses 6, 7, and 8, is when all changes and differences that distinguish peoples, that distinguish nations, and that distinguish religions are annulled, and all human beings come to speak one language and subjugate themselves to one God, as was predicted by the prophets. So he sees these as stages of history, until finally the Messianic age, when all humanity joins together. And you will soon see how this works with the words Amim, Amim, V'yir'u oto kol avsei aretz, and all humanity to the edges of the earth will, double entendre, yir'u, will see, and will fear one God. Rashi takes a different approach, and his approach looks at Bet and Gimel as one part, and Daled as a chorus, Hey as a second part, followed by the chorus, and finally the third part, besides the fact that it was once written not horizontally but vertically to form the shape of a menorah. In many kihilot, this mizmor is recited right before they daven Ma'ariv on Motzei Shabbos. Then, as I indicated, and Rabbi Yitzchak Arama says, Fardim and many other kihilot say this mizmor every day and every evening of Sfirat HaOmer. And they actually say this before making the bracha, and to some, after they make the bracha for Sfirat HaOmer. Sfardim say it both in the morning as well as in the evening, as I indicate. And it is virtually in all shuls in the Shiviti. This hangs there because of the 49 7 times 7. Let's look at this now. Lamnatzeach binginot mizmor shir. This is one of the very few mizmorim called not only mizmor, but also shir, and it is directions l'neginot, to the players of the music. So apparently this was sung. And sadly, of course, we don't have the melodies with which this was sung. That's been long lost to us. Elohim, referring to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Yechaneinu v'yevarcheinu. He will grace us. He will bless us. He will shine His face. He will illuminate His face. He will reveal His face. But interestingly, it doesn't say Eleinu, but Itanu. With us. I want to be able to focus on that for a moment. Rabbi Shimshon Rifael Hirsch argues that this mizmor, as you will soon see, begins as a mizmor, and to him, a mizmor is a pensive song, a melody that is kind of expressing longing and yearning, and comes as a result with a request. Please, God, grace us.
bless us.
And therefore is probably sung more slowly, more feelingly, more poignantly. It ends, however, as a shir. And that shir comes at the end, where you will see that it's now more celebratory. It is, the music is picking up, and it is much more joyous and less pensive or poignant. So it's both a mizmor and a shir, according to Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch. When was this written? Comes Ibn Ezra and tells us, first and foremost, he says, we don't know who the author is. And he leaves it there and says, and we don't, no point in speculating if and when this was written, by whom and for what purpose. Radak, on the other hand, sees this as a mizmor that was written back then, foretelling the time of the ingathering of all Am Yisrael in the days of the Mashiach. Sforno agrees and says, not that this is celebrating, it's a prayer for the forthcoming redemption. Malbim, on the other hand, though it does not say that it was composed by David, says this was written during the 3-year famine that occurred in the beginning of David's reign. Because there is, in this case, a prayer for salvation, and finally, a song of gratitude, Eretz Natna Yivula, the earth has given its yield, indicating that at this point, their prayers have finally been answered. But the rest of it does not seem to quite sit with that, at least by my estimation. And he seems to have a hard time trying to make it fit in any way. But you would have noticed in the very first line that there's something reminiscent. Yechanenu v'yevarchenu, Ya'er panav itanu sela, should remind you of Birkat Kohanim, of the priestly blessing. Yevarechecha Hashem v'yishmerecha, Ya'er Hashem panav elecha v'chunecha, Yisa Hashem panav elecha v'yasem lecha shalom. So you've got the same words, Yechanenu, Yevarchenu, and Ya'er panav, that figures in the priestly blessing and seems to remind us of this. Well, of course, Rashi would concur, and Mitzudot tells us, what does the word Yechanenu mean? Notice that I translated, be gracious to us. Mitzudot tells us that it comes from the word Chanina, and Chanina means pardon. Giving somebody a complete forgiveness, a pardon that erases your entire, if you'd like, criminal or sinful past. God, pardon us, and then bless us. Radak is the one that sees it as the word coming from the word chen, which means grace, and it prays for, asks for, something I don't deserve. Be gracious with me just because. And Sforno elaborates and says, you will redeem us even if we're not worthy of it. But Rabbi Shimshon Raphael here says, Yechanenu is give us the gift of grace. And the gift of grace is the ability to conceive, to think, to conceptualize. And that's why in the Amida we say, Ata chonen le'adam dat. You grace man with knowledge, with awareness. Make us aware. Make us aware of you. Open our eyes to your existence, if you like. V'yivarchenu abroche? Comes Radak and says, look at the word bracha. It's multiples. Bet is 2. Resh is 200. Kaf is 20. It's 2 2 2s in the ones column, the 10th column, the 100th column. And what it really means is, more! Give me more! More of all that's good! I want more! More of whatever it is you need!
not just enough to satisfy you, but above and beyond, so that your cup runneth over, if you like. Sono says, increase us. So many of us have been killed. We need more. Pu uvu, let us be multiplied and fruitful. Because so little of us is left after this horrible golus. So many were murdered, he says, and so many were lost to us by forced conversion. He being a refugee of 1492. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, unless otherwise said, Yevanchenu means material goods. The Yechanenu is spiritual goods. And Malbim says, Brocha is only one thing, rain, fertility, so that your work and your efforts are not for naught. Comes now the strange language, Ya'er Panav Itanu Sela. May he shine, enlighten his face, with us and not to us. Strange language. She says, show us a smiley face by giving us the dew and the rain when we need it. Radak says, your face shining on us, with us, is giving us success in all that we do, in all of our endeavors, no matter what they are. Sono says, open our eyes so we can see your wonders, and particularly the wonders that are to be found in learning Torah, the secrets that are hidden between the lines. But Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch says, show us what is the purpose of our lives. What is the legacy and where are we headed and what is our destiny? Not our fate, but for what was are we made? What is the meaning of our existence? And how can we fulfill it through our free will? Knowing what our purpose is, we would then be able to exercise our free will and go in that way. But Malbim says, no, Itanu is a play on the word Urim v'tumim. Through the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, they would be given messages. Come again and speak to us that way, the way you once did through the Kohen. Noticing that these words remind us of the Birkat Kohanim. So that we may know, Ladat Be'eretz Darkecha. So we may know here on earth, not in heaven, not after we die, but here on earth while we are still in our physical bodies, we may know your ways. Now let's talk a minute about what it means to know God's ways. To know God's ways can have multiple meanings. According to one position, to know God's ways is what is God asking us to do? What mitzvahs? What are our obligations? What is our mission in life? To others, it means to understand God's ways in how He deals with us. Why I am suffering. Why this one got sick. Why a young child died. Explain your ways to me. Explain your ways. Why is it that some good people are suffering and evil people seem to be flourishing? Life makes no sense. Please teach us your ways. I have a footnote here for you. You can't help but notice. In Shmot, after the sin of the golden calf, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to heaven. He pleads the case for Am Yisrael. And Hashem there teaches him the 13 midot. He teaches him Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum V'Chanun. But he does that after Moshe asks him, Hodieni na et darkecha. Teach me your ways so that I may know you. In other words, how you run this world. And there, Chazal tell us, he asked him, why are good people suffering? Why are evil people flourishing? And Hashem answered to him, you will not be able to see my face and live. The best you can do is see only half the story. And that's why the name of Hashem is Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which numerically is 26. He only showed him half the face, which is 13 qualities. Tehillim Kafhei asks a similar question. Darkecha Hashem hodieni. Please God, let me know, show me, teach me, make known to me your ways. Ochotecha landeni, your pathways, teach it to me. Hadricheni, guide me, be'amitecha, guide me by your truth and teach me. In Tehillim, it's clear that he wants to learn how to live this world, and therefore he needs to know the ways about that I should take in this world, what choices I should make in this world, what's the right thing to do. Whereas in Shemot, it means, show me, God, how you run the world, not how I should run the world. We then proceed, Bechol goyim yeshuatecha. Show me your way, the way which will lead all nations towards your salvation. Now whoever is praying is no longer praying just for us. He's praying for other nations as well. And if you will show us your ways, explain your ways in this world, then what will happen? Comes the chorus. Yoducha amim Elokim, Yoducha amim kulam. Then all nations will, and Yoducha is a double entendre. They will acknowledge you, they will thank you. They will do so, all of them, bringing all humanity back together again, as they once were, because they come from the same root, from Adam and Chava. Malbim wants to differentiate between the languages that we're seeing here. We see here Goyim, Amim, and in the next line we'll hear Uleumim. And what do they mean? Leom, according to Malbim, is a religion or a culture that distinguishes a particular people. So in Israel, when you're asked for Leom, you can write down Yehudi, you can write down Nutzri, you can write down Muslimi. It is not a political unit, it is a cultural and religious unit. Goyim is a collective, a group that are put together, and that group that can be put together geographically, though a Goy can have in it several Leumim. So in the United States, we might say Americans are a Goy, and in this Goy are several Leumim. People who are Mormons, people who are Catholics, people who are Jewish, people who are atheists, all kinds. Amim, what makes you an Am, is a political unit. A political unit, not necessarily a geographic unit. So if you were a British subject, you could live in the island of Great Britain, or you could have been in Australia, or you might have been in the colonies in Americas, and you would have been considered an Am. Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch disagrees. He says that Goyim are distinguished not by geography, but by external features, what we might think of as ethnic or racial ones. So we would say Asian, African, but if you do that, in a sense he's actually agreeing with Malbim. Because the reason we call them Asian America is because they came originally from Asia. But he says what distinguishes them is a certain look, the shape of their eyes, the color of their skin. As far as he's concerned, an Am is somebody who shares a culture or a language. And a Leom, as far as he's concerned, is a political unit. Well, we would have to be able to test this against the prophecy of Isaiah. Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu foretold a day in which Lo yisagoi el goi cherev, in which one nation, Goy, would not wield the sword against another. I would venture to say that under those circumstances, the word Goy would indicate a political unit, wouldn't it?
But I could also argue that it might represent a religious or cultural unit. Because I can have Goy El Goy wielding the sword between Shiites and Sunnis in one country, in Iraq, or in another country, in Pakistan, or in... So I would be able to then say that perhaps it stands for a cultural or ethnic identity. It makes it very difficult for us to differentiate. At best, what we can say, Am Yisrael is not called a Goy most of the time. It's called Am Yisrael. And I would venture to say that the reason for that is that Am is similar to the word Im, with people who see themselves as peers, as equals with others with whom they surround themselves, make a unit. It is a group that is relatively homogeneous. And maybe that's what it means. Well, either way, Yoducha Amim Elokim, Yoducha Amim Kulam. And then what will happen? Yismichu v'yiranenu le'umim. They will rejoice and they will sing in joy. All these nations, all these peoples, no longer religions. We can't say it anymore because they all recognize one God. All these different languages, le'umim. Why will then they will rejoice? Explains Mitzudat David, when they finally can see that there is a reward for good deeds and a punishment for evil. That's why he begs God, Ladat be'eretz darkecha. You see, God, if you would show us, if people could see, if they would perceive that there is ultimate reward for goodness, and there is no such thing as impunity for evil, they would then recognize that there is a judge and that there is a moral law that binds all people. They will therefore, all of them, says Fono, each and every one of them will acknowledge you and will thank you. The reason they've turned away from you, he says, is that life is absurd. It seems like nothing, there is no judge. It seems like it's capricious. It seems like what befalls us is blind fate. But if you would show yourself, then all peoples would recognize you. When would they recognize you? Ki tishpot amim mishol. When you judge nations, mishol. Mishol actually means on a plane, but in an even-keeled fashion. Not mountains, not valleys, but equitably, so that nobody gets away with murder. Others tell us the equitably is law and mercy brought together as a scale until the two of them are parallel to each other, completely flat and horizontal, which is what the word mishor means, in a straight line. When they see this, they will rejoice. Ule'umim? And then when they recognize you and rejoice and sing to you, Be'eretz Tanchem Sela, you will be able to lead them, to guide them in their life here on earth. Meaning, even if they don't have 613 mitzvahs and they don't have the Torah, they would have the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, and that would bring all peoples together. Then again, Yoducha Amim Elokim, Yoducha Amim Kulam. To some, this is merely a repetition of this theme of the chorus, because it is ultimately what we are yearning for. And it is the purpose of our golus, it is the purpose of our dispersion, according to Rabbi Shimshon Kefail Hirsch. When all peoples are judged, he says, by the Mishol. And the Mishol is as follows. No one people subjugates another. No one human being exploits another.
There is no differentiation between the strong and the weak, between the powerful and those that have been disenfranchised in the judgment before God. No protección. If that happens, then all humanity would join together. Then what would happen? Eretz natna yevula. And according to the Radak, the past tense here is not indicating it happened once. It's a hope. Then, as it were, I can envision, and he writes about it in past tense, as if it's happened in front of his eyes. The land will give its yield, its harvest. In Vayikra, after listing the curses and the blessings, Hashem tells us as follows, Im bechukotai telechu, if you follow my ordinances, that mitzvotai tishmol, and you safeguard my commandments and obey them and observe them, then natati gishmechem bi'itam, I will give your rains at their right time. No point having rain when we don't need it, when there's been too much of it, so the things flood. I will give you rain at the right time after you have planted. Venatna ha'aretz yivula, and the land will give its yield. It will give its harvest, its full harvest, as opposed to a paltry one. This, of course, is also said in the second chapter that we say of the Shema. V'haya im shamoa tishme'u et mitzvotai asher anochi mitzave etchem. Right? Then your rain will come in its right time, and there will be food aplenty for all peoples, and no one will need to be hungry. Then what we can do is, Yevarcheinu Elokim, Elokeinu. In case you think that this is something that just happened, he envisions, oh, if the land would only give its yield, please bless us, God, our God. And it comes full circle to the way it was at the beginning. Yes, it's Elohim. He's one God. But if not for everyone, then at least for the people with whom you have a covenant, our God. And then what we will do is, Yevarcheinu Elokim. If they won't accept you, we will. Please bless us. Please notice how we're repeating these lines. Bless us, God. And if you bless us, and they see that we, your people, are flourishing. We have made the desert bloom. The rain has come down and you've saved us. Then yiru'oto kol afsei haaretz. Then they will fear him, fear God, and see God, all the edges of the earth. Essentially, what he's saying is that when Am Yisrael is blessed, all other people come to say, what's their secret? What's the blessing and the gifts of the Jews? What do they have that we don't have? What link do they have to their God that we don't have? And as a result, they too will join with us. They too will submit and come to us, becoming part of us. Together, all the ends of the earth.